But we've been talking about this idea that we want to make sure that the future you is a you that you can be proud of, because just because you are the person that you are today is no guarantee that you're going to be that person tomorrow. You've got to actively make sure that you're taking care of your soul, because we've all seen people and looked at people and we say, and how could they live with themselves? How could they live such a double life? How could they show up to the dinner table while they've got that going on in the background? How could they keep coming to work and all of a sudden their life blows up and people ask, man, how could they live with themselves? And the kind of behind the question is, I could never do that. I could never live with myself if I was doing those type of things. But what we've been saying in this series is, yes, you could. And yes, I could. We do it every day. We might not be able to live with myself today, but if I'm not careful, the me of tomorrow and me of the future isn't a guarantee of the way that I am today. I've got to take care of my soul. And the big idea of this series, kind of the overarching idea, is the health of your soul determines your capacity for duplicity, or that capacity to be one thing in front of people and another thing in private. That you portray this person to the outward looking audience, but inside, you know, I've got some things happening inside of me. And if my soul isn't healthy, I'll let that gap between who I am and who I say I am grow larger and larger. Larger and larger, eventually it'll blow up in my face. But if I can put some habits into practice to make sure my soul is healthy, when I notice that there's a gap, I don't try to manage it, I don't try to excuse it, I don't try to explain it away. I work really hard to close it, because again, I'm capable and you're capable of becoming somebody that we wouldn't like and somebody that we wouldn't want to be. And so the first thing we talked about in week number one is, if we're going to make sure our soul is healthy, we surrender our will. Every single day we wake up and say, God, here's my ears and my eyes and my mind and my hands and my feet and my dreams and my opportunities. I want your will to be done in my life. It's not a one-time thing, but it's every day. God, here I am once again. And what it does is it sharpens your conscience. It sharpens my conscience so that as I'm going into the day and I start to see a sliver of that duplicity, I start to see a little bit of light between who I am and who I say that I am, my conscience is sharp. Oh, I can't go in that direction. Oh, I shouldn't move there. I want my soul to be healthy. And then last week we said we want to guard your heart. And we looked at three very specific emotions that we need to watch out for: the emotion of guilt and the emotion of anger and the emotion of jealousy, because we all leak. I'm leaking against the persons and the people that I love the most. What's inside of me comes out into the people around my life. And if I have anger and if I have jealousy and if I have guilt inside of me, that's going to spill out into the people that I love and that I work with. And so I've got to guard my heart. And today we're going to kind of continue in on that idea. And we're going to talk about something that every single person, it's not a religious thing or a Christian thing, it's just a thing. Every single person deals with. You can't get away from it. You can't outgrow it. You don't mature away from it. It is a thing that you will have to battle against and deal with your entire life. And it's something that keeps you from and causes you to. Let me read a list of some things that this little insidious virus that's inside of all of us keeps us from and causes us to. You'll probably be able to guess what it is when it's all done. It keeps this little thing that's inside of me, this little thing that's inside of you, it keeps you from celebrating other people's success. It keeps you from initiating an apology, whether you were totally wrong or whether you were just 5% wrong. It keeps you arguing your point long after you've realized, I don't really have much of a point. But I just keep arguing. I just can't find myself out of this thing. It keeps me from admitting that I have a weakness. Keeps me from admitting that I need help, admitting that I don't know what I'm doing, even though everybody else knows that I don't know what I'm doing. It keeps me from being honest with myself. It keeps me from learning new things because we want people to think we're smarter than we really are. It causes me to feel good when others fail. It causes me to power up. It causes me to cheat before I allow myself to lose. It causes me to lie about my past. It causes me to have the final word. It causes me to buy things to impress people that aren't really paying any attention to me. It's in all of us, and it's this right here. It's pride. All of us. Me, you, you're not going to grow out of it. You're not going to mature away from it. You will, for your whole life, have to deal with the tension of, I've got this tension of pride inside of me. And it's not the pride of, I'm proud of my kids' artwork. It's not the pride of, hey, I think I did a good job at my work, or, you know, not those type of things. It's not those words. It's the pride that makes me bigger and the people around me smaller. It's the pride that puffs me up at the cost of somebody else. And it's here's the problem with pride. And you know this, but maybe you haven't thought about it in this particular type of words. Pride is really easy to see in other people, but it's really hard to see in the mirror, right? You've met some people that you kind of shy away from and resist because, boy, they're just proud. They're just, you say it this way, they're just full of themselves. It's all about them. Boy, it's just me. And we can see it in other people really, really easily. You know someone, you're thinking of someone now who steals with pride and is not dealing with it well. It's really difficult to see in the mirror. The challenge for us, and maybe what we've never thought about, is that because it's so difficult to see in the mirror, it's possible that there are people in your life today, maybe people that you're sitting next to, that are victims of your pride, and you are not aware of it. There are people that are catching the shrapnel of your pride that you don't realize that you're wounding, because pride, what pride inevitably does, we think of it as something that it makes me bigger, and in our mind, we are bigger, but in reality, what it does is it makes me smaller. It diminishes us. Let me show you a few ways that pride diminishes us and see if you can relate to any of these. See if these are something that you've seen at different points and seasons of your life. Pride diminishes our ability to apologize. That's why in every marriage, from time to time, you're just sitting across from each other at the dinner table in awkward, cold silence. Anybody in that? Don't raise your hands, but some of you are working through that today. You know, it's just you're at church and you're smiling and it's all fine, but when you get back into the car, it's on like Donkey Kong, you know, because you had your fight and it's just getting a little chilly, and it says, man, I'm not going to be the one to apologize. You apologize. You did this, and yeah, but I did that, but I'm not going to apologize. Pride diminishes our ability to apologize. And not only does it diminish our ability to apologize to somebody that we've wronged or we've been wronged from, it diminishes our ability to say what needs to be said. Some of you maybe grew up in a home like this, where you never heard that, hey, I'm proud of you. Hey, you did a great job. Maybe you grew up in a home with a mom or a dad that criticism was kind of the thing that ruled the day, that every type of thing that they said you did a good job was followed, but hey, here's what you need to do better next time. Not trying to coach you and trying to make you better, but just to try to poke holes in your life and try to poke holes in your dreams. And maybe you're still dealing with that now. It could be that you're a parent and that's still something that you struggle with your own kids, that it's easy to see what they need to do better, but it's difficult for you to say, for whatever reason, hey, I'm proud of you. You did a great job. Maybe you thought they were going to be this sports athlete, but instead they're the artist, and it's difficult for you. And it's just pride. It keeps us from being able to say what needs to be said. It diminishes our ability to hear what needs to be heard. There's some people in your life that have tried to help you, that have tried to help me, that have tried to say, hey, I wish you would do it this way, or have you considered this? And we just kind of tune them out. We say, no, I know better. I know how to do this. This is something that I've got. I've got this handled. And we just are not willing to hear people coach and instruct and direct us. It diminishes our ability to connect with others. That you, for whatever reason, maybe it's something in your past, who knows, but it just, you put some walls up and people can only get so close to you. You kind of wall people out, and you'll be surface level relationships and surface level friends, but you'll never let anybody get really, really close. What is that? We make the excuse, well, I've just been hurt too many times. Well, I'm just protecting myself. But what it really is, if we dig a little bit further, is, well, it's pride. Because when I'm full of me, there's no room for anybody else. When it's all about me, there's no room for you in my life. And if you start to crowd me out, it makes me uncomfortable. And so pride pushes people away. And the most problematic of all of them is pride diminishes our ability to connect with God. Because what we're going to see this morning is, at its core, faith and Christianity and following Jesus is a offering of humility. We have to be willing to be humble in order. What we're going to discover today is requiring humility is the first part of following Jesus. That I can't be full of pride and follow Jesus at the same time. David said it this way in Psalms chapter 10, in his pride, the wicked man does not seek God. In all of his thoughts, there's there is just no room. It's this attitude that all of us deal with at certain times. I can do this on my own. I'm smart. I've got the college degree. I've got the money in the bank. I'm sophisticated. That was fine when I was at Sunday school age and all the stories, and that was all good, but it's just pride, 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 and it pushes away God. And we might be willing to pray every now and again, and we might be able to throw up a prayer, hey, God, help me, but for the majority of my life, I don't need God. I've got this on my own. And I'm just telling you, it's in us. It's in you. That pride that is already inside of us can grow and grow and grow, and it can start to wreck and ruin your soul. It can wreck and ruin your relationships. It can take your heart to a place that you don't want your heart to go. And the only way to deal with it, I don't think that it's possible for you to fully escape it. I think it's a tension you have to constantly be aware of, constantly be managing, is to choose purposely radical, Jesus-centered humility. C.S. Lewis, the wonderful, wonderful author, I'm not quoting verbatim, but by and large, he said that pride at its core is the root of every other sin. That every other vice, every sin that we can think of, if we dig down a little bit deeper, it's pride that's at the bottom. And the only way to get away from it is to daily, actively choose radical Jesus-centered humility. Because as we've already said, you just can't follow Jesus and follow pride at the same time. You just simply cannot. Because in order to follow Jesus, I have to be willing to say, I can't do this. I can't get to God on my own. I can't live my life on my own. I'm not wise enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not smart enough. And so God, I'm putting my life into your hands. You have to take it from here. It's an act of humility. And for some people, that keeps them from following Jesus fully. I mean, we'll come to church every now and again and we'll believe a lot of things, but to fully give my life to Jesus, I just don't think I can go that far. And we might intellectually try to excuse it. Well, I'm just too smart for that, or I learned some things. But if we dig down a little bit deeper, for most of us, now there are some legitimate intellectual things that we have to think through, but for many, many things, let's just pride. I want to be in control of me. I want to run my own life. I want to be the one that is in charge. I don't want to give up control of my life to somebody that I can't even see, that I can't even hear. I don't want to give up control. I don't want to serve other people. I don't want to honor other people. I don't want to forgive other people. I don't want to apologize to other people. I don't want to write a blank check of my life to God. I can't do that. It's pride. It's pride. And so what we're going to look at this morning is three radical humility choices that we can make that are shown by Jesus and later by the Apostle Paul, and kind of contrast those to what pride says. And then at the end, I want to ask you a question that you don't have to answer out loud. You don't ever have to let anybody else know, but I want you to wrestle with this question later this week. Three things really briefly, and then we will continue on with the week. Pride, what pride does is elevate self. It's all about me. What Jesus does and what he invites his followers to do is he bends to serve. There was nothing that Jesus couldn't do. I mean, Jesus, as he was doing his ministry, he had the crowds, he had the power, he had the influence. He could have said, hey, everybody, look at me. And yet all through his ministry, we see Jesus, instead of powering up and pointing at himself, every single time he had an opportunity, how can I serve other people? How can I look out for other people? How can I make other people better? How can I heal people and teach people and encourage people? It wasn't about him. And then at the very end of his life, at his last supper with his disciples, he puts on this extraordinary, extraordinary display. And I don't think we can probably fully grasp the emotions of this because it's so foreign to us. This is nothing that we would ever do. But Jesus is in the upper room with his disciples. And he knows that later that night, Judas is going to betray him. He knows that the next morning, he's going to die a brutal, brutal, brutal death. He sees that coming. And what does Jesus do? John chapter 13. Jesus knew that the Father had given everything into his hands. He had everything that he could ever possibly want. He could do anything that he wanted to do. That he had come from God, then he was going back to God. He was God in flesh and bones. There was nothing that was out of his reach. And with that, I love this next word. So, fully God, nothing he couldn't do, all the power in the world, Knowing that, so he got up from supper, laid aside his outer clothing, took a towel, and tied it around himself. Next, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet. Now, again, we can't fully grasp this, but can you just imagine the power of this? Can you imagine the disciples sitting around? I mean, their feet are gnarly. You think you've seen some gnarly feet? You think you looked down in the shower this morning and saw some gnarly feet? You didn't see the gnarly feet like these dudes' gnarly feet who walk all day long, who sandals and just be so, so gnarly. And they see this guy that they've learned from, and he's said so many things that have changed their life. They've seen him raise people from the dead. They've seen him open blind eyes. They've seen things that we can't even fathom. And here he is washing their feet because he was God. Because he had all the power, he chose, I'm going to get as low as I possibly can and dry them with the towel that he had around them. Those same hands that he used to heal people, wash dirty feet, skip down a couple verses to verse number 12. When Jesus had washed their feet and put on his outer clothing, he reclined again and said to them, hey, do you know what I've just done for you? Like, do you understand what's just happened? And I think that it was, you know, a question that didn't really need answered. Clearly, they didn't fully understand. You call me teacher and Lord, and you're speaking rightly. In other words, he's affirming, I am God. I have been sent from God on a mission to save humanity, to build a bridge between the sinfulness of man and the righteousness of God. You are right that I am that person, then that's what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, now he's talking to us, you ought to wash one another's feet. Now, what we're not going to do this morning is pass out bowls with water and let you wash the person's next to you feet, because that'd be pretty weird. It'd be pretty weird. But the idea is not that you physically wash, but the idea is, how have you looked for opportunities to serve? You've got a lot of influence, and you've got a lot of power, and you've got a lot of ability. And Jesus, knowing that he had all of that, that compelled him, how low can I get? How can I serve? With everything that I have at my disposal, pride says everybody ought to be looking at you. Everybody ought to be serving you. Everybody ought to be making sure that you're in good shape. But Jesus understood, I am at the top. I have all the power. I have all the influence. I can do anything that I want. And what I'm going to choose to do with that is, how can I serve you? How can I work towards what you need? How can I make sure that you're taken care of? And then Jesus said, hey, if you're gonna follow me, that's the way you live. If you're gonna be a follower of Jesus, it's not just about church attendance, it's about when you go to work tomorrow and when you go back home today, you look for opportunities. What can I, that I have at my disposal, how can I serve you? How can I carry your load? How can I use the gifts and talents that God has put in my hand to make sure that you're in better shape? That's what radical humility does. And what does it do when we start to make that the priority of our life? It roots out pride. It's the choice. I'm going to follow Jesus into service. And so, even when it's hard, how can I use what I have to help you? Pride says, here's the second thing. Pride says, wait. Jesus says, initiate. It's a great rhyme. You can put it on your bathroom mirror for later if you want to. Pride says, I'm going to wait for the other person to apologize. I'm not apologizing to them. I mean, it was basically their fault. It was 60% their fault and 40% my fault. It was 95% their fault and 5% my fault. And so I'm just going to wait for them. I mean, if they apologize, I'll probably, you know, brood a little bit, and I'll tell them it's okay. I'll forgive them, but I'm not waiting. They've got to go first. That's what pride says. But Jesus says, no, you got to initiate. Well, no. They were the one that was in the wrong. Yeah, I want you to initiate. Yeah, but it wasn't my fault. I want you to initiate. I want you to initiate reconciliation. The Apostle Paul said in Romans, for while we were helpless, at the right time, Christ initiated something. He didn't wait for us to get our life together. He didn't wait to make sure that we had all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed. He initiated, did everything good for the people who were the worst. He did all the right things for the people who there was no guarantee that they would ever turn to him and follow him and do the right things on his behalf. Jesus was right we were wrong, and he initiated reconciliation in your life, in my life, in the relationships to you that matter the most. Yes, they were wrong. Okay, well, let's all just get on the same page. They were wrong. Don't elbow anybody. They're wrong, okay? I'm on your side. I agree with you. They were wrong. You were right. Jesus says initiate. Initiate reconciliation. You have to wait for that other person with no guarantee that we would ever respond, with full knowledge that some people would reject the offer of salvation, that would reject the offer of the forgiveness of sins. Jesus, in his rightness, took care of our wrongness. Now I want you to live the same way. Vic says this way, for rarely someone will die for a just person, though for a good person, perhaps somebody might even dare to die. But God proves his own love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Do you know how you prove your love to somebody? You choose radical humility. You know how your marriage gets better? You choose radical humility. You know how your relationships at work get better? You choose radical humility. Now, let me tell you what some of you are thinking this morning. Yeah, but. No, I couldn't do that because. You know what that is? That's pride. That's pride that's kind of poking up because there's this thing in you that says, if I initiate, it's going to make them feel like that was okay. That's not what it's saying. It's just saying, the relationship is most important to me. And so I'm going to initiate. Yep, they were wrong. I was right, but I'm not going to wait. Pride wants me to wait. Pride wants me to kind of just twirl my thumbs and wait for them to come slinking back. Wait for them to apologize because they were wrong. Following Jesus, that's just not what we do. Following Jesus says, I'm going to initiate. I'm going to do the right thing, even though the wrong thing was done to me. And that thing inside of me, and that thing inside of you that maybe even right now is pushing against that, do you know what that is? It's pride. And it'll rot your soul. And it'll mess up your relationships. That's what following Jesus looks like. And then the third one is this, that pride holds back. Jesus pours out. That pride, I've got to make sure that I'm taken care of first. And Jesus says, I'm going to empty myself on behalf of you. I'm going to pour myself out, not for my benefit, but for your benefit. The Apostle Paul wrote it this way in Philippians, do nothing, do nothing. Don't go to work, don't be a husband, don't be a wife, don't be a parent, don't be a coach, don't be a whatever it is. Do nothing out of selfish ambition. Hey, what is this going to do for me? How high is on the ladder is this going to make me climb? How good is this going to make me look? How bright is the spotlight is going to shine on me if I do this? He says, no, that's not the way that, that's the way that the world lives, but you're different. You're following Jesus now. You're a Christian, and following Jesus is more than just church attendance. It's more than just saying a prayer every now and again. Do nothing, whatever it is in your life that you're getting ready to do. Don't do it for, I got to fill me up. Don't do it in conceit, but here's our word, in humility, consider others as more important yourselves. It doesn't mean that they are more important. It just means that I'm going to act as if they are. Humility is not, somebody said it this way, not an original quote, but humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's just thinking of yourself less. It's just saying, it's not about me. When I go to work tomorrow, it's not about me. How can I pour myself out for my coworker? How can I pour myself out for the people that I don't even really like, and we are at odds, and they're always pushing my buttons, and they have the spiritual gift of driving me crazy. Every time I see them, they just grate on my last nerve. Don't say their name out loud, but you all have somebody like that in your life. In humility, consider that person better than yourself. Not because they are, but because of what Jesus has done on our behalf. Everyone, so we're included in that. Sorry, there's no escape hatch. Everyone should look not to his own interests, not about me, but rather to the interests of others. What do you need? What do I have? We kind of talked about it already. What do I have in my hands that can benefit you? What do I have at my disposal that can help you go further faster? It's not all about me. Adopt the same attitude, here it is, of Christ Jesus. Why should we do this? Well, it's the attitude that Jesus had. Adopt the same attitude of Jesus, who, existing in the form of God, we have that next slide, yes, who, existing in the form of God, did not consider equality with God as something to be exploited. In other words, he's saying, just because he had all the power, he wasn't going to use all the power for himself. Just because he had all the ability didn't mean that he was going to use his ability for himself. He wasn't going to exploit other people's weakness for his strength. No, we take on that same attitude. Who, existing in the form of God, go back to that last slide for me, sorry, did not consider equality with God. He was God. He was on equal footing with God. There was nothing he couldn't do as something to be exploited. Instead, here's what Jesus did. Here's our word. He emptied himself by assuming the form of a servant, taking on the likeness of humanity. And when he had come as a man, he humbled himself. Why? For us. Why would Jesus do that for you? Why would Jesus do that? Because the relationship between God and humanity was more important than his pride. The relationship that was broken because of our sin was more important than Jesus powering up. And so he humbled himself on your behalf, on my behalf, becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. Jesus went the entire way to the cross in humility. All he's asking you to do is to apologize. He's not asking you to go to the cross. He's just asking you to say sorry. He's asking you to initiate. Well, it wasn't my fault. I know it. It wasn't Jesus' fault either. But the relationship was really important to him. Yeah, but he emptied himself. He chose to say, I'm going to choose radical humility on your behalf. I'm going to put myself at the back of the line, not because I should be there, but because I know you can't get there on your own. He chose humility. That he doesn't ask you to die, not asking you to go to the cross. He might be asking you to walk across the room. He might be asking you to hold your tongue when it would be so much easier for you to gossip and to spill out and to say this. He's asking you to go first. He's asking you to be willing to say the things that need to be said, the things that need to be heard. What does radical humility look like? Because I'm just telling you, I have got pride inside of my heart. I know that. I know that. And it is a fight for me. It is something that I have to consistently root out. And what humility does, radical humility, it serves. Got that slide? Maybe? Nope, there it is. Radical humility, it serves, it initiates, and it pours out. Now, let me finish. I want you to imagine, just for a second, what would your closest relationships look like if every person in that relationship chose that attitude? Can you imagine how good your marriage would be if you as a couple decided, I'm going to serve, I'm going to initiate, and I'm going to pour out? Can you imagine how much healthier your childhood would have been if your mom or your dad would have served and initiated and poured out? Can you imagine the wounds that you wouldn't have to deal with today? Can you imagine how amazing your workplace would be if everybody there chose to serve and chose to initiate and chose to pour out? Think of the problems that could be solved. Think of the problems that would have never become problems. If Christians would just act like Christians. I mean, this isn't like Christianity 401. This is 101. This is what Christians do. Think of the marriages that could have been saved. Think of the relationships that could have been repaired. I just imagine what it would have been like. Jesus has been right the whole time. This is what taking care of our soul looks like. Choosing day in and day out. Radical humility. I'm going to serve. I'm going to initiate. I'm going to pour out. Let me ask you a question for you to wrestle with. Don't answer out loud because that'd be pretty weird. But just wrestle. And you might not have the answer right now. But I wonder you just to this week and this afternoon, I just want you to do something for me. Would you take 5 or 10 minutes? Maybe it might not take that long. It might take a half hour. I don't know what it's going to take. But would you take 30 minutes or 5 minutes, whatever that looks like, would you just be quiet, just get by yourself for a little bit, and would you be willing to dig down into yourself and answer honestly this question? How does pride manifest itself in you? How does pride manifest itself in you? Because it does. And if you can't think of a way that it does, just get around the dinner table with the people that you love the most and just ask them, hey, how does pride manifest itself in me? And here's what people are going to do. They're going to get real quiet, and they're going to start to look at everybody except you because they know. They can see it in you. It's hard to see in the mirror. It's easy to see in other people. I want you to dig down and answer that question. Let me ask, again, you don't need to tell me how it does, but let me tell you how it manifests itself in me. Pride, again, I struggle with pride. There's two primary ways, there's lots of ways, but two primary ways that pride manifests itself in me that I have to be very, very vigilant to fight against. And I don't always win the fight. The first one is this, that my ideas are always the best ideas. I just assume that my ideas are awesome. I just think that if I had the idea, it's probably the right idea, and I don't actually need to hear your idea because I already had the idea and my idea is the best idea, so don't worry about any more ideas. I've got the idea. And I can push people away. And what is it? It's not that I'm the smarter one. It's just that I'm the more prideful one. It's not that I have the best ideas. It's just my pride says, you're smarter than everybody else. You've done this before. It's just pride in me. And there's another way that pride manifests itself in me, and I have to fight against it. I'm not very good at it. I really have to work on it, and I've got a long, long ways to go. It's very, very difficult for me to ask for help. It's very difficult for me to ask for help. I just think that I can do this. I've got this. And people will even be willing to say, I've had people say, hey, can I help you with this? Can I give you a hand? I say, no, I'm okay. No, I've got this. And it's this false humility that says, I don't want to bother you, and oh, you've got other things, but you know what it is at the core of me? It's just pride. It's pride that says, I can do this better than you can. I don't need your help because I've got this. I know how to do this quicker. I know how to do this better. I know how to do this more efficiently, and so now I don't need your help, and oh, that's fine, you're so busy. That's not, it's just pride. It's inside of me, and I've got to fight against it because I want to follow Jesus. And I don't want the pride in me to push you out. And I don't want the pride in me to push God out. And I don't want the pride in me to keep me from apologizing and keep me from saying what needs to be said and keep me from hearing what I need to hear. How does pride manifest itself in you? Because there's ways that it does. And it impacts and it affects other people. And then lastly, and this is kind of just a rhetorical question, how much longer do you plan to let pride hold the remote of your life? How much longer? How much longer is pride going to be the thing that directs your life? How much longer are you going to hold people at an arm's distance? How long are you going to hold God at an arm's length? That's what pride does. But radical humility, taking care of our soul, making sure that there's no gap between the person that I am and the person that I say that I am, it chooses radical humility. I'm going to go, and maybe it's for some of you, I'm going to go and apologize today. Maybe I need to go congratulate somebody. Maybe I need to go and tell somebody what they've needed to hear from me. Go tell my son, go tell my daughter, go tell whoever it is. I'm proud of you. I'm grateful for you. I'm so appreciative of you. Maybe for some of you, I've got to admit I need some help. It's time for me to admit I do have a drinking problem. Time to admit I do have an addiction. I've been kind of nursing it and saying, no, it's not that big of a deal, and I haven't been wanted to ask for help, and I don't want people to ask me about this, but it's time to admit I've got a problem. Maybe it's time that I need to be willing to learn from people who aren't like me, people who think differently than me, and people that see the world differently than me. If Jesus was humble enough to die for you, wouldn't we be willing to follow him into humility? It'll make sure that our soul is in better shape. Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, this is convicting to me because I'm sure not very good at it. I know inside of me there is pride, and it impacts the people that I love the most. It holds people hostage. It makes environments chilly. It just can crowd you out. And so, Lord, I know that I need this. I need to actively choose radical humility. Lord, I'm praying for all of us that are in the room, people that are watching online. If maybe this hit close to home to them, if maybe they're walking back into a pretty cold environment later today, into a pretty difficult work environment, Lord, I'm praying that as hard as it is, can we follow you into radical humility? Later today, tomorrow at work, whatever it looks like, whatever situation we need this in, Lord, would you help us to serve? Would you help us to initiate, and would you help us to pour out? Lord, we need your grace for that. We need your strength for it. Would you give us eyes to see how pride manifests itself in us? Lord, we don't want other people around us to have to deal with the shrapnel of our pride. We don't want to ruin relationships and give other people wounds and scars because of the pride that we are not aware of. So give us eyes to see those things, Lord. Help us to root it out and follow you into radical humility. Lord, we're so grateful that while we were yet sinners, that you initiated. When the relationship was broken and it was entirely our fault, that you loved us so much that you came and did what we couldn't do, that you initiated a reconciliation on our behalf. We're so grateful. Help us to follow you into that. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.